Hey, Rachel.
Hey, Ryan.
How are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm feeling sultry now I'm talking to you.
Oh, okay then.
I'm feeling yummy, too. I'm feeling the yum, yum, all in me and on me. And around
Well, that's
me.
On theme. So.
It's on brand because we're the Yum Yum Podcast. Obviously, the name is derived and taken from the piece of scripture that is Star Trek Season 2. That's right, Star Trek Discovery Season 2, to be precise. Not just any old Star Trek, but the spiritual one. The one about faith. The one about belief. And that line, Jesus wish he said that line, but he didn't. Because Narn, who is Jesus of Star Trek, practically, said that line. Who is absent from this episode, weirdly. We are doing a Star Trek Discovery rewatch, Rachel, just to inform you that we're doing it, as well as the people listening.
Okay, thanks.
Of course, as stated, this is our rewatch. This is our first time watching it after the initial airing of the show. And as stated in our previous episode, just to highlight again, there's going to be spoiler discussions, but not for season 3 that is currently airing. We're going to refrain from that. As stated, it is still airing, and all the puzzle pieces of that season haven't fallen into place to fully reflect what this season looks like. So we won't be touching upon that. We'll just be touching upon this season, where this season goes. So if you have not watched Star Trek Discovery before, or you are not up to date with season 2, we are going to be talking about spoilers in that regard, because this being a rewatch, we're looking back at this marvelous piece of art and going, does it make any sense, or is it marvelously mad? Rachel's giving me a discerned look, but let's get into it, Rachel. We are going to be reviewing and talking about, for this particular one, episode 2 of season 2, New Eden. Okay. The IMDb description offers up 2 choices for this, so I'm going to read the one that is by the CBS press release, which has a little bit more details than the regular IMDb one. So here's what CBS's press release had to say about New Eden. A new signal appears, prompting Stamets's emotional return to the mycelial network and leading Burnham Pike and I can't remember how we pronounce her name off the top of my head. I remember they call her Oo at many points, to a pre-war planet where they face a complex ethical dilemma. Tilly's overeagerness lands her in trouble, but when the planet and Discovery's landing party are threatened, her curiosity may be the one thing that can save them. That is a fucking crazy description of this episode.
Look, because all of those things happen, but not in the way that they're described.
It makes the emphasis on some of those sound different. Like, Stamets' emotional return is a little bit heavier than what I got from his storyline in this episode. And even that, I wouldn't call a storyline. I would call a plot beat.
Yeah. It is there. And that is true, but that's not really what the episode's about.
Astromycology has taught me that nothing is ever truly gone. Fungi are the universe's recyclers. This is how termination begets creation. It's why life is eternal. And my place is on this side of that cycle.
What did you think of this episode upon that original watch, and how does it stack up this time round for you?
Meh. And it's still meh.
See, you and I are very different. I remembered this episode very fondly. I saw this and said, oh, because the premiere episode of season 2 did not leave me with oh, it left me with oh. This left me oh, because in this one,
maybe,
I saw that they were really trying to be more overtly Star Trek. They were taking on, what I'm saying is, this episode showed me the show I wanted in a way. Not exactly what I mean, I don't know what I want, I guess. Nobody really knows what they want ever, but it showed me what I thought the show was going to be from the beginning. This is what more people want. They want these ethical dilemmas, they want these debates and quandaries and spirituality being versus science, faith vs. science. All that stuff is in this episode. And when I saw this, I said, oh, cool, they're going to try. And they did for a few episodes. Yeah. And maybe my opinions on that will change, because my opinions on this episode have changed upon the rewatch. Ooh. I liked it a little less, but I still liked it. I remembered this one being my favorite episode of season two. And I don't know if that's going to necessarily change or not. I don't know if the others are going to be better or worse than I remember. But I remember this one being my favorite because I thought about it afterwards. I was thinking about the quandaries that they had to deal with. I was thinking about whether it was right or wrong with how they broke the Prime Directive and how they enforced it, and all the typical things that come from a General Order 1 Prime Directive-centric episode of Star Trek. Those questions that linger with you were lingering with me after this one. And that's why it was my favorite. Season 2 didn't have anything nearly as cool or as fun or as great as the Harry Mudd time loop episode from Season 1. I still think that's Discovery's best episode, in my opinion. But this one was always my favorite season two and my second favorite Star Trek Discovery episode. This time round, there are problems I have with it, but I still enjoy it, and I still like the things it brings up, and the way this episode is reshaping some of the things that Star Trek Discovery tried to introduce with its version of this universe. So you felt meh about this the first time, and you're still in that general ballpark now?
I think I just have my guard up with it, I think, is a large part of why I'm in the realm of meh about it, because I can see what it could have been, and it is taking more elements from old Star Trek that I would like to see in more episodes of Discovery, but I didn't trust that it was going to go anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, I get what you're stating. Like, in a way, these next few episodes are kind of like with what season one did, where they have their what feels like the obligatory this is a Star Trek type story, like the obligatory away mission episode from season one, Seavers Pacembellum, where that episode is still, I think, the lowest rated of the show. And it feels like we have to do it because this is what Star Trek has done. And I get that feeling from this episode, unfortunately, when I look at it upon a rewatch, because I think about how it really impacts the greater story and our characters and the logic of it. And it really does kind of feel like, in a way, this was a throwaway episode of, we did this because this is what Star Trek is known for doing, and it's a Star Trek-related story, and that is a weakness upon it on the rewatch. I still think it holds up pretty well, but that is a factor that I note down in my brain, because this is not an episodic story, this is a serialized story, and this one does feel like, what does it add to the serialized nature of this? Nothing. And since it is a throwback to old school Star Trek, it does feel like obligatory, here's the Star Trek content in our Star Trek show.
Yeah.
Especially after last episode.
Yeah. I think it also does feel like it's just ticking a box on the rewatch in particular, because there's more of a clarity on how everything is meant to work backwards from the season finale events.
Yeah.
So it's just like, well, we need this thing, so it's got to happen here. And it makes sense here. And it's just like, well, okay, well, that's just what needs to happen. And then we move on.
Here's how I like to structure a season when you're in the room. You spend the first couple of months talking about what you want the show to be. And you ideally decide on an outcome. We want the finale to be here. This is where we want to end them. And so once you know that, you can reverse engineer your season very strategically to get to that outcome.
My main negative, my huge negative of this episode, the one that drags it down, is the management of stories and time dedicated to them. This episode, to me, I could fix it in my brain to make this a 10 out of 10 episode.
What?
Yep, here's what it is. Here's what the episode should be. A story. They go down to the planet, have the ethical quandary about General Order 1, which is what we have, which is, do we interfere? Do we interfere because it's ethically right to, or is it ethically wrong? And also because we have a bigger mission at stake. Cool, that stuff's there. Expand upon that, have more stuff dedicated to that A story. B story. Have the exact same ethical quandary about the General Order 1, but it's on the Starship Discovery with whether or not they should let the planet get hit with that radiation or not, because we've seen that also. So basically have the A and B story be a mirroring of the same idea, but explored from different points of view. So people on the ground, on the planet, interacting with the society and the faith and the people up in the spaceship looking at it from up above. That could also tie into the religious aspect that this episode is delving into. Saru being a far more cold, analytical character, and Pike being far more humble, spiritual character, but also they have their differences of opinion, and you have Michael on one side, and you have Stamets on the other. That's how you fix this episode. None of the Tilly shit. None of the Paul shit. Cut that, because all that is serving the season's narrative arc of we're setting up Tilly stuff, we're paying off Paul stuff, and setting up more Paul stuff. You know, I understand that, but to me, that is fat in this episode. Cut that, focus on the B, make the B story an actual B story like that, because they try to touch upon it, but then they quickly move on and go, let's do a donut. And that's how you fix this episode in my brain. In my brain, it's just a matter of focus and time management. But this is a serialized story. This is a part of a serialized story, so they need what I consider to be the fat to be in this episode. But as I've stated in previous discussions on this show, what did those elements serve this story? Not anything. Those elements didn't serve anything to this particular story. Not saying Paul or Tilly as characters didn't serve anything to this story, but their overarching season-long plot elements did not serve anything to this story. And you could have written it in a way that was far smoother. That's my big problem with the episode. I'm watching it going, I like this ethical quandary, and I like the potential of the one on the ship that could have been done. And that is my huge problem, is just there's the serialized fat that is laid on top of what is a really interesting episode.
Yeah, and it could have been a really interesting opportunity to explore Saru and Pike because of their unique leadership styles and their unique approaches, and to contrast the lessons that they've taken from their religious fathers, because Saru's father is a priest and Pike's
professor of science and religion.
Yeah, is a like theological kind of person, not necessarily a priest, but well-educated in the realm of religion.
Yes, someone who definitely comes from a background where religion is very key to them, whether it is believing or at least understanding. And that's my big issue with the episode. Everything else, Everything else in the episode is this typical Star Trek Discovery, what I have labeled the Star Trek Discovery aesthetic. Terrible lines of dialogue, weird editing choices, weird camera movements, obnoxious directing, lens flares, unnecessary amounts of music, failed attempts at humor, although this episode did have successful attempts at humor, like a successful shots at humor that I did genuinely laugh and smile at. And Michael actually worked in this episode outside of the season-long narrative thing, which is Spock. Not because it's Spock, but Michael in that mode at the beginning of the episode, it's so Michael, but she really worked for me in this episode when she fell into the role that Spock serves in the original series, which is being the second to the captain and offering an alternative view from their expertise. And she was offering it from her expertise, but also her moral beliefs as well, that she's picked up from that first season. And we've grown to accept that that's her standpoint, and we're growing to accept that this is Pike's standpoint, and there's the conflict between them without it being a yelling match, the stuff that we liked.
Yeah.
That we like about Star Trek. Her weakness in this episode was that opening scene with her and Pike, because
that
she's being
whole
them.
Opening scene was just
season long arc. We got to keep propelling the mystery
and
box.
It just
the mystery
felt
box
off, partially because like it opens with that narration from Spock. The way that they start that off with the way that they've mixed it to make it seem like it's going to be his narration and we're going to cut to him, but it's actually the audio file and we only get like the degrading effect when it cuts to them listening to it.
It's a cock tease.
And it's just...
You remember that, right? They keep cock teasing us about Spock. And I think upon the rewatch and even on the initial watch, that was a mistake to do this half a season long cock tease, because it's dissatisfying to watch. And I said, like, when we were watching it, I can't remember if they had his voice at the end of the last episode either, but in this one we hear his voice up top, and I said, wouldn't it have been far better if we didn't even hear what Spock sounds like until we physically met him? Wouldn't that have been more impactful? But instead, we just get him doing a voiceover here, and you're like, eh.
Yeah.
Undercuts.
Yeah.
What they're going to try to do with him.
It's odd because it's very clear what they're trying to do with these things, to build the anticipation and build these ideas of who Spock is, and reinforcing the idea of the strained relationship between him and Burnham. But what they do by telling us so much and telling us the same things over and over again actually lessens the impact when he finally turns up, because it's just like, well, like, it's going to play out this way, because this is the only way that it makes sense for them to do it with how much they've said already. And everything is laid out for that. Like, you don't know what's going to happen quite after they meet, but you're fairly certain because of the feel of the show, it's going to be, well,
the build up that they keep.
They're
going
to be strained, and then they will resolve their issues
and cry,
because
Michael didn't cry.
Burnham is perfect,
except for when she's not.
The way I left things with my brother, we haven't spoken in years.
Family dynamics can be complicated.
Mystery box.
My huge issue this season too, more so than last season, it feels like it takes so long for the story to get going in each episode. It feels like I don't have the patience. I just want them to get to the planet already. I don't really care about the introduction scenes as much in this season thus far, because they are just we got to serve the greater narrative. I am finding the first act of these first two episodes to be really sluggish, and my patience is just wearing thin with that.
Yeah, my patience is also wearing thin with the amount that they keep on flip-flopping on their decisions. Like, the main point of season one, like, the coda of that season is that you should always stick to your principles.
To your principles, yes.
But there are, like, 3-4 moments in this episode where they are discussing their principles.
Yeah.
And they decide to go against their principles because it serves the current mission.
Yeah.
Like, allowing Paul to use the spore drive again because it's convenient for this mission.
I 100% agree with you, but I will just say, if you're going to lump Pike into this, I will disagree with you because his is an arc in the episode.
Oh, yes. But
that's an arc he has. And Michael has a mini arc of her own when it comes to her beliefs as well. But the Paul one, I wrote down in my notes how that makes Pike look like such a jerk if you've seen that first season. Because by the end of the first season, Lorca is vilified by the amazing Hugh, by the way. What a great character Hugh was. And several other characters, and by the show, he was vilified for forcing Paul to do jumps, even though he coerced it in a way where it wasn't necessarily like he was forcing him to do it or ordering him. He was he manipulated him to do it without him knowing. Of course, Lorca was evil, not going to deny that. But by the end of the first season, they made it very clear that Paul was never going to jump again. And if they were going to do it, there was going to be a massive consequence to doing it to his health, to his physical, mental health, but also Starfleet wise. This episode.
But nah.
They did it as a quick recap for Pike. Like, oh, by the way, we did all this stuff, and Pike's like, that's a thing that I forgot too. Pike's whole entire character is him smirking and reacting to the silly things that season one does. Like, that's a lot of his character is Spore Highway. Crazy. Like, yeah, that's a lot of his character in season two is hearing the shit from season one and going, wow. Nuts. Like, basically, I heard about your previous captain. Crazy.
Basically, anytime he's in the captain's chair or more generally on the bridge, he's responding to something being like, okay, then. I guess that happened.
But
I'll have to take your word for it. Let's go. Let's keep moving forward.
But, see, that element fails because of one storytelling thing that they do with this. Mystery box storytelling. The mystery box here is there's a planet ludicrously far away that has humans on it. There's no way humans could be on there with how far away they are. It will take them 150 years to get there at max speed, right? It's impossible for them to be there. That's the mystery box story of, like, how did they get there?
Can you trace any warp signatures of starships near the planet?
Not a single one.
I can, however, confirm that, based on audiophonic degradation, the transmission has been broadcasting on a loop for 200 years.
That's before warp was even invented.
Somebody want to tell me how they got here?
Ooh, and the mystery box storytelling there completely undercuts the stuff that they set up with Paul, because in this episode they need to get to that planet immediately or not, and they have to. So how do they get there? Spore drive. Oh, but we set up that Paul with all the stuff with Paul. Oh, just have Pike say get him to do it, and then have him and Tilly have a teary-eyed scene, and he gets a little cranky afterwards. But there's no conflict there that you would think would be there with how the show has wrung out how much of a trauma it is for Paul to do this.
Yeah, and it makes
Pike look like a jerk.
It only addresses the aspect of like him looking forward to or being scared of bumping into Hugh in the network, not any of the physical or mental impacts that were explored in season one. There's nothing linked to that. There's no mention of maybe that is making the idea of seeing Hugh again harder on him because of the impacts. Like, maybe it's compounding it. Maybe, like, you know, they need to monitor him.
But the mystery box there makes it so that story element is rushed through, and thus that whole thing Thus the whole story beats that they've been playing with since season one make no sense anymore, because it does make Pike look like a jerk if you've seen that first season, because how much they make an emphasis that it's wrong for Paul to do this and that he doesn't want to. In this episode, Pike's still a cool guy, right? Yeah. Anson Mount's playing it cool, but if you've seen that first season, it does come across like, oh, well, Pike's kind of, like, we know what this means, and it makes Pike look like a jerk because he's just saying, make him do it. Make him do it.
Mm-hmm.
And
It's okay this time. I say yes. Yeah. Let's do it. And that, then Stamets what makes him, is like, okay.
What makes him different from Lorca? Because when Lorca did it, it was literally to save lives and to help end an intergalactic war. What is the purpose of Pike doing it in this? We know
it's
nothing
in
about
this of Starfleet's number one mission, the Red Light.
Which we don't know why that's so important. No,
why do they care so much?
Season one set up that it was...
Yes, they're on alert because it's just after the war, but why...
Why does this warrant it?
Like, there's no reason other than it is Discovery, we're on Discovery,
we need it
and
to
a
happen.
Show needs to happen.
We need it to happen. In season one, they manufactured it. They told the story so that even Lorca, before we knew he was a Mirrorverse captain, that it was evil and wrong of him to make Paul do these jumps to end a war and to save lives. They still made it so that it was wrong in that. Here, we have a nebulous grand mission to track red signals, which has we have no understanding of how important this is, how much this is going to be a big deal in the grand scheme of things. Like, how important is it? Is it more important than saving lives and ending a war? We don't know that. And the answer is technically, yes, it is. But at this point in the story, the characters and us, the audience, don't know that. So it makes Pike look like a jerk, because if Lorca was made out to be a jerk for doing the exact same thing but to save lives, it makes Pike look like a bigger jerk because he's doing it and he's not doing anything of actual importance. It's just, here's a red signal burst, let's go look at it. It's not, oh, we have to stop an intergalactic war, or, oh, we have to stop a genocide of a planet, or anything. It is just, do it. The mystery box needs to exist because that's the storytelling mechanism that these writers are accustomed to. And the mystery box couldn't have the planet be relatively close, because then what would be the mystery of how these people got there? They could have just been any old humans that traveled there and made a colony there and they were forgotten. So they need to be ludicrously far away so that the mystery could exist. But how do we get there? Oh, we just use a spore drive. Mystery box storytelling has its negative consequences, and he is an example of that, because it completely ruins any kind of emotional strength that Paul could have had in this episode's story.
How do you want to be remembered in history? Alongside the Wright brothers, Elon Musk, Zefram Cochrane? Or as a failed fungus expert? A selfish little man who put the survival of his own ego before the lives of others?
Are you done?
Well, you have some blood on your face.
And your hands, Lieutenant. Get back to work. Fix the problem.
I don't know if he'll ever be the same, let alone if he'll ever jump again.
I know you blame me for this, and you're right. I'm his captain, and I'm responsible for his well-being.
Yes, you were.
Getting to the bottom of these signals is of utmost importance to the Federation. They let you use the drive to fight the Klingons. They'll give us dispensation now. How long before it can be operational?
Once I begin prepping Commander Stamets, 20 minutes.
Get to it.
Do you even want him to get better?
I don't know if this is necessarily true or if this is because of my own background. I'm not a spiritual person. I am not a religious being myself. I've grown up a Catholic, but I don't believe in it. And one of the issues that I have in this story, and this could have been alleviated if it was structured the way I said, where the A story gets more scenes, beef it up. The people on the planet outside of Jacob, they're just so cardboard religious and dumb that I don't feel anything for them. And I wrote in my note at a certain point, because of just how generically, like, stupidly religious they come across, of, like, rejecting of anything, that I just wrote, it feels like this episode's making a case that faith is stupid. Because Pike is making all of these really eloquent statements about religion, his background, and he makes it seem really smart and, like, you know, like, really a lot going on. But then we meet the people on the planet who are spiritual, and they come across like dumbasses.
Yeah.
There's no nuance to them.
Which is odd, because they do reflect positively on their spirituality and the strength that it has given their communities on.
Yeah, but it also shows that it's what's killing them, because they're so spiritual that they've rejected science, because Jacob is the only one who believes in science, and they call that the ways of the old earth. And because he's the only one that wants to try and better them, they are stuck in their old ways, and
yeah,
now
there's
everything's
been no growth.
Even their religion is dying, even the belief in religion is dying, because they've been so spiritual and so faithful that they've rejected any form of technological growth, and that technological decay has actually affected their believers in attending the church. So,
yeah,
what is that saying?
It's odd, because it's also a weird, probably accidental commentary on, like, the Amish and Mennonites as well.
Well, they didn't mention them in their lists of religions.
No, they didn't mention it directly, but there's that the correlation, because of the kind of rejection of technology and the advancement of things, because, like, the Amish are willing to use technology up until the point, but it's to the point where we no longer think of those things as being technology, because they're so basic and so far behind what we have.
But I'm not even saying just technology. Rational thought. These people have no rational thought. And it's even just the way that she plays it. The religious woman, and the way it's written. It feels like a Stephen... Like I said this in our short track.
Yeah.
It feels like a Stephen King thing, right? Like where Stephen King is very... He's very heavy-handed about religion in his stories. And he writes these religious fanatic characters. I'm not saying she was a fanatic, but... What is, I don't know, like, if there was more time spent there giving them a more nuanced point of view, or at least a little bit, another layer to them, but...
Even if it was just some clarification through some dialogue about them trying to make a comment on just the dangers of blind faith, not the danger of faith in general and how it can lead to destruction, but... saying that it's blind faith and acceptance that can hold a people back and to be damaging to society, even though its aims is to protect people.
They needed those scenes, or that scene that showed what it is about the faith that they have, whether it's a spiritual festival or a prayer session or something that their faith delivers as a positive to their society. And perhaps also have show you even more strongly, although they kind of hint this but don't really have it, that his devotion to science and all of that can also be a negative thing. Have a bit of both happening there, where they both are commenting on one another, not saying make him bad because him science and make them good because they religion, but show how his lack of spirituality is a negative and their lack and their lack of rationality is a detriment to them. Show a scene of them getting the positives of their belief so that us, the audience, can understand why this is something that should be maintained and not completely disregarded. And they don't have that. They don't have that here. So I look at these people from my non-spiritual stance, and I just look at them and go, fucking idiots. Just let the guy save your society with science, you idiots. Because they don't give these characters enough time on screen to show us any layers to them.
No, and even if they're just, I know, I find it too glossy, I guess, and too convenient that in no time in 200 years, so like, what, 7-8 generations, has anybody questioned or fought back or undermined the idea of the Red Angel? Like,
well, his family.
Yeah, but they don't do it openly. It's just within their family, and it is, like, at least within this community, we don't know how the other areas are set up. But just the idea of them being, all of them being like, no question, this thing happened and this thing happened exactly this way. It's just, like, it just doesn't ring true for me, which
it's
makes
frustrating.
Which makes it more, I know, irritating when we are shown those imagery things and, well, like, kind of a recap of what happened through the stained glass windows.
Yeah, I like spirituality and religion in sci-fi. I'm not against it. I enjoy it in Star Trek. I've enjoyed it in other sci-fi, Stargate, Babylon 5 does it very heavily and does it in a very interesting way. It has characters that are openly religious in its story, as does
and who
Star
deal
Trek
with becoming religious figures as
yeah,
well.
And as does Star Trek with DS9. They have religious characters and spiritual characters.
Kira.
And who are both on the side of good and evil. And even people in the same faith as a character that is good can be on the side of evil and vice versa. And this episode winks at being as close as those ones can be, but it's still bogged down by the Star Trek Discovery. We need to have multiple pieces on the board all at once.
They deserve to be reintegrated into modern society.
By their own account, they left Earth in 2053. They did not use a starship. That makes them pre-warp. Subject to General Order 1, we cannot interfere with their natural development.
But they believe Earth and the human race were destroyed. They're wrong. Worse, the faith they cling to is a lie.
Can you prove that?
May. Don't like her. Never liked her. Don't care for her story. Here it is introduced, and it completely ruins sections of this episode. That performance is arrogant and annoying and overpitched, and Tilly is just unbearably stupid in this episode,
but
and
she's,
I hate
her. She's the one that has the ideas continually save the ship, and it's just really weird because they're like just doing that thing where she's a crazy genius.
Why do they have to make her so dumb in moments to then extreme pivot to make her so smart? Why can't they just have her be smart and capable? Not saying she should be perfect, but why do they have to have her literally nearly kill herself and could have endangered so many others. And they brush that off with an amazing scene with her and Saru. It's still brushing it off. That scene is amazing, and I like their dynamic, and I think they're a good pairing. But that whole scene where she's extracting the thing and she's looking at it and she gets exploded across the cargo bay and gets killed practically, I felt nothing other than, you stupid bitch, you dumbass idiot. So I hate how they do this. So it's so one tip. They just go from one end of the spectrum to the other, and as quick as they do these whip pans in this episode that were nauseating. I want to like Tilly. I do. But they don't know how to calm her down in this episode in particular. Like, I was noticing all of the actors, but Tilly especially, hands always up in the air talking. They've always got their hands or arms up in the air, waving them about, held like in awkward positions to really emphasize what they're talking about, because they can't just have them talk. No. They have to have them moving about. And Tilly, I understand, it makes sense for her character, but it was so
much there is an exception
in this.
When Michael's trying to be extra Vulcan-y, she'll put her hands behind her back.
We don't do funny. Which I enjoyed.
Yeah, that was fine. That was an example of the humor that did kind of work. The one that really didn't work well for me was when Tilly's like, I have the plan to save the planet. I'm storming off now. And then the doors stay open, and then she's walked the wrong way. And it's just like,
Red Dwarf did that same gag 30 years ago, and it was done so much better because of the timing.
Yeah.
They really, really don't understand comedic timing when it comes to physical gags like that. They don't. They're so slow, like the first acts of their episodes currently. So slow to the mark. But that's all the negatives.
It has something in it that doesn't, like, it has something in it that makes it not completely awful.
That's all the negatives I can really disperse upon that aren't just the usual affair that we talk about, the obnoxious music, the obnoxious filming techniques, the them talking so fast and stilted acting here and there, and characters that we just don't care about, but here they are on screen wasting our time. Outside of those normal things, I can't think of any other major negatives that I want to really bring up, because this is still an episode I like, even though those things that we did talk about that were negative are pretty damning. I still enjoy this because it does tickle my primate brain of, hey, it's a Star Trek thing that I enjoy, because I love Prime Directive episodes. I love Prime Directive episodes because they bring up so many interesting facets that from the characters, from the culture of the ship itself, as well as the culture of the people we're getting these stories from, whether they be someone like Data in Star Trek, who has an innocence to him about the Prime Directive in certain episodes, and Picard, who is a seasoned captain at this point, who himself was a young, reckless man, and now he's trying to be straight-laced, and Riker is a little bit more carefree, and Janeway, who is trying her best to have these Starfleet principles in a completely barren wasteland of a world where it's so easy to throw those principles away, and so on. So this episode works for me because it does bring those elements here. I love Pike, and I love his whole stance, and I love that he has a reasonable arc of why he changes his mind on it. Yeah. Unlike in some other Star Trek episodes of the past where it is just, we need to break it. And we won't really reference that we broke it. We'll just move on. Or maybe we'll wipe their memories and it doesn't count. I like his arc because I like Pike. And they really develop him in this episode. They bring all these things to his background. They not just tell you them, but they show you them with character actions. Yeah. And the way he interacts with the people of faith made the people of faith look better than what they represented themselves.
Yeah, and the way that the story represents them as well. I do enjoy Prime Directive episodes as well. I just think that this one didn't quite hit that mark for me because it just felt like an echo of those episodes because they bring up those points, but with the episode, the way that it is, it doesn't actually delve into any of them to the degree that I want it to. It doesn't actually deal with the Prime Directive and why it's there. It's just a, do we break it or do we not break it? And they treat it like it's any other rule.
I will concede in a point on that. I do think they should have shown a greater emphasis on the why the Prime Directive exists in the first place. But I guess you could say that's the scene in which the little girl grabs a phaser and nearly shoots herself in the fucking head.
Mm-hmm.
If that was a bigger component of the episode, as if, and I know this sounds drastic, but wouldn't it have been fucking brutal if you had the guy of science, Jacob, who brings these things there, and the little girl accidentally shoots him?
Yeah.
I mean, brutal me, it would have been fucking legendary if she accidentally shot herself and killed herself and it caused a big drama. But yeah, I agree, they needed a bigger emphasis on why the Prime Directive exists in the first place for them to
why it's there in the first place, why it matters in this instance, even though they're humans, and how that can be used for either side of the argument, because they are pre-warp, but they're humans, and humans under normal circumstances have achieved warp. So these humans are technically capable of that if they had the resources, but they're not on Earth, and they have been taken out of their natural development already.
And they have what happened to Earth.
Our place to put them back? And they do deal with that a little bit with
and
the
to
conversation.
Rob their religion from them, because that would rob their religion and
like,
their spiritual
brings
their ideologies.
That up when they're on the planet, but it isn't dealt with really in link with the Prime Directive.
Well, she wants to break the Prime Directive, though. In that defense, she's talking about it in a very, not necessarily a derogatory way, but a very backhanded way, because she doesn't she doesn't believe in their religion, because she knows the truth. But Pike has to be the mediator here and go, well, that's not up to you, because you know what you know to be the truth, but this is the truth to them. It's not right for us to take that from them. To me, I agree. They should have focused in on that a bit more, but what's the interesting wrinkle here is these are humans who have been mysterious. Remove the mysterious aspect. These are humans who have been removed from the rest of humanity, been plonked in isolation with the belief of what's happened to Earth, and now they've formed a religion around it. And is it right to let them know what's going on, or is it right to leave them there? If they had more time, they could have shown negatives that were happening on that society to make Michael's debate stronger. What happens if the crops weren't fulfilled very well? What happens if they weren't growing? What happens if there was a planetary? But I guess you could argue that's what the radiation thing from above was going to do, but that was going to be an instant kill. We wanted to talk about societal degradation.
Like, this is a thing that's happening directly now, and in an hour and a half, everything's going to be over and this world is going to be destroyed.
Destroyed, yeah.
Where it could have been much more interesting if it was a problem that was building up, like the numerous episodes in Star Trek where we have planets that are dealing with like a degradation in their orbit or long-lasting droughts, like in the Inner Light, like stuff like that.
They should have also, what I think more so is what, and again, this is kind of in the episode, but time being spent on that story directly could have made this better, which is Jacob exists. Jacob knows. Is it wrong or right for them to not directly let him know that he's right? But more importantly, what could have been explored is it's basically witch trials for him. He is the outsider crazy man who's shaking up the society, and wouldn't it have been interesting to see that from their little moral debate standpoint, he is a guy who knows the truth, who's campaigning the truth, and he's being persecuted by the rest of the society. That is kind of in the episode. But if it was pushed more, because that's the thing that I think about the most, is him. I think about that character. And I think about what a torturous situation it would have been for his whole entire family lineage.
To be dealing with that throughout the whole 200 years.
Trying to promote the truth in a world that rejects it because of blind faith. And here we have characters that come in and they know the truth. But should they acknowledge that? Should they reveal the truth? Or do they let these people continue and let their society grow and let people like Jacob fall to that society? It's an unfortunate thing, but is it wrong or right? These are the things I think about with this episode. And I agree, they don't touch upon it heavily enough, but they do touch upon it. And none of this type of stuff was in season one. This is it. This is an improvement.
Yeah.
And this is, and look, not every one of these type of episodes are done greatly either in other Star Treks, but I think for Discovery, this is the best way they could have approached this. But again, I still think that there could have been improvements here and there. But I think about this episode, I feel sorry for that Jacob guy. I feel sorry for him. And I'm happy also with how they conclude his character. He was satisfied with just knowing. At this point, the knowledge of it was good enough for him. And I bought that. I bought that. You could say it was for dramatic convenience, but I bought that at this point, just knowing that he was right was enough for him to stop. Just that alone.
Yeah, I like that too, but there are also a lot of interesting ways that Star Trek has explored the idea of what do you do with the person who has figured it out?
It's usually just take them up to the ship and show them the ship
and
their own planet and say, look.
But then do you leave them back there? How much of that is an influence? Like what right do they have to intervene in things, which is explored in various TNG episodes in particular?
It is our highest law that we shall not interfere with other cultures.
Then revealing yourselves was an accident.
Oh, yes. And now we must leave you.
Why? There's so much you can teach us.
But that, too, would be interference. You must progress in your own way.
So we will. You have taught us there is nothing beyond our reach.
Not even the stars.
I still think, even underneath these what are to me fundamental flaws and time management issues and focus issues, this demonstrates to me that Star Trek Discovery is capable of doing stories
like
this.
It could if it wanted to, but that isn't what it wants to do.
Not all the time. And like I said, it isn't as great for me on this rewatch, because I'm noticing these issues. And like I said at the beginning, when I think about it in the grand scheme of this season, it doesn't really contribute to much, because you start thinking about also the time travel mechanics. Why did Michael get soldiers from World War III and transplant them to this planet and put a red signal there this time to go get them? Because you go, okay, the idea is, it's for them to set up a base so that when they travel to the future, they can have somewhere to be that's civilized and
civilized, but doesn't
and
have
control,
the technology.
And control
on
doesn't
it.
Know about it.
Yes,
but there are factors to it that you just have to turn your brain off to when you think about, one, how did Michael know about these World War III people? to know to go get them outside of this story happening of they went to a planet and there was these people who came from World War III and they were put there. But how did Michael know in the first place about these people? It's like what I said about Tig Notaro last episode. How did Michael know about Tig to know to go get her so that the story could happen outside of the Red Angel set up a signal for them to go get her? But if the Red Angel setting up these signals is Michael, how does Michael know to go get... And you... This is what makes me unravel. Maybe there are answers... Maybe there are answers to these things that I've forgotten, but I can't remember these details right now, so it is a frustration when I do watch an episode like this going, how did Michael know to get these World War III soldiers? Why this planet... Why not a planet that will never have that radiation thing on it? How does Michael know that the soldiers would survive? How does Michael know that they would form a religion? How does Michael know that their technology...
Well, it wasn't only soldiers in there.
They were World War III.
It was civilians as well as soldiers.
Oh, you're right.
So, it was people taking shelter in the church.
When they were getting attacked. But there's all these variables that you have to think about. Like, how did Michael know in those several hundred years they were on there that there wasn't going to be some forms of disease, natural disaster, or whatever to completely wipe them out? How did she know that? How did she know that this radioactive thing was going to fall on them and kill them for them to know to put the red signal there so that Discovery could come along to go get it? How did she know that Discovery needed to go find Tig Notaro, who was conveniently near a meteorite thing with antimatter, so that could drag the radiation? Mm-hmm. And these are the things you that drive me up the wall when I do watch an episode like this, because I just say, this episode works when I remove the season-long mystery box. I remove in my brain when they go, how the hell did these people get here? That's not what's interesting in this episode. The interesting thing is the ethical debate that is at the center of the episode. Not the mystery that they want us to follow, but that, the ethical debate about the Prime Directive. That's what this story is about, not the mystery. Before we do the Hudar, Rachel, I want to talk about churches.
What about them?
They make a big point in this episode that only Captain Pike knows what a church is.
Yeah, he calls the building a church.
And only he knows what that is.
Well,
No one else on the crew knows. Michael doesn't know. She knows of Earth religions.
She's familiar with them, but she doesn't recognize the iconography and the architecture to be a church.
Owowo is a Luddite, which I cool. Again, she really didn't serve a purpose to that mission other than she could open a lock. I don't know what she actually served to their way mission other than it was cool that they put her there, but they gave her a neat little... she's from a Luddite background, by the way, but she didn't do anything in the story.
No.
Other than she opened a lock.
Yep.
Why did they need her to do that? I don't know.
She's like, I can open it with a magnet. And then I don't think she uses a magnet. She uses a bit of wire.
Yeah, no, it was very confusing.
And it's just like...
I think she magnetized it so that the lock would flip, so then she could use the wire.
Oh.
It's still stupid. But they make a big deal that Pike is the only one that understands what churches are.
Mm-hmm. He's the only one that stepped in a church before.
Which indicates churches exist. If this is a somewhere world in which churches don't exist, like religion on Earth has been completely forgotten and abandoned, I could buy it slightly. But even then, churches, monasteries, temples are prevalent things in most civilized societies. Societies have some form of place of worship.
I'm pretty sure that they visit a temple on Vulcan later in the
And that's
season.
What I'm going to say. Like, Michael comes from a Vulcan background. They're deeply spiritual people. We've even seen that demonstrated in the show thus far. It is so stupid that they did that. It's just so that Pike, they can really reinforce Pike's religious background. But it does make the world seem really stupid when you start thinking about it, because it raises all these weird questions. Like, why is Pike the only one that knows what a church is? Didn't Saru come from a religious family himself? What, did the Kelpians not have any place of worship? I guess not. They were a slave race. Well, doesn't Michael come from a Vulcan background? They're deeply spiritual people. I guess they don't have temples. And if they do, Michael doesn't recognize what...
They didn't look like that, so she can't tell.
But she still doesn't recognize that it's clearly a place of... It's stupid. It's just stupid.
Yeah, it's just for convenience.
It raises all these stupid questions that the show obviously didn't mean to raise, but they do, because the writing there was, make Pike know what this is, because he's religious. But that in itself makes the world and the other characters not make sense.
The broadcast frequency from the surface is obsolete. Too weak for interstellar communication.
It's all coming from this structure here.
It's a church, Burnham.
Yes, sir.
Hugh's dead, but they do mention...
And Hugh doesn't appear in flashbacks or in the mycelial network. No visual Hugh.
Nothing, but we do get discussions about Hugh. They make it overtly clear that Hugh was the one that drove them out of the mycelial network, even though it was Paul, but, you know, Hugh guided them. They reinforced that. But they do bring up the question I had from season one, which was, at first I thought Paul was the mycelial network pulling memories from my brain, trying to communicate with me through someone I knew. They brought that up in the episode, but now Paul believes that it probably was Hugh. There's no actual reason
he's
for why
sure.
he does, but he's leaning towards that way because of his grief and because, you know, it's just something that it's hope. You would think about that. And then this episode brings in May, which confuses things, because May is someone that is pulled from someone's memories from the mycelial network to communicate with them. So it's that extra layer of confusion when you have rewatched it. So you could see why I was confused like that when I saw season one, because even the show recognizes that that is an element there that would confuse audiences, because it was deliberately a bit ambiguous. They wanted the surprise of, oh, it's actually Paul, Hugh in the network, and now we're going to save him, even though they heavily marketed and the actor talked on and on and on about that we're going to bring Paul, we're going to bring Hugh back, we're going to bring Hugh back because of the backlash. But this episode at least addressed what I was bringing up in season one, so I don't feel silly.
At first I told myself it was a fabrication of my own mind, culled from my memories by the mycelia, but since then, I'm not so sure. I didn't see him the last time I jumped, but knowing it's a possibility...
I would think that possibility would make you happy.
What would you give it? A yum meaning bad, or a yum yum being good?
A reluctant yum yum, I guess?
Yum yum.
You were far more enthusiastic about last week's episode with a yum yum. You like that one more for the trash.
Yeah, I did. Like, this one is yum yum because it has various bits that are quality, with the asterisks of being like for Star Trek Discovery, of course, but it also has things that I do like that fit within the show as well. Like, they're few and far between and with caveats, but they're there.
Yeah.
And also, I recognize that this one is trying to play out more Star Trek elements, which is something that we've given it flack for. So I think that it deserves the yum yum.
I give it a yum yum.
Yum yum.
I think that this episode does have some problems for sure that we've talked about heavily. But in spite of those problems, I look upon this episode fondly. I think it tackles the ethical debates in an interesting fashion. It does so with vigor, and it does it with characters that I was surprisingly invested in, Michael and Pike. They both brought up interesting points of view, and they both convinced each other in ways that seemed very reasonable, not just in terms of narratively, but also character-wise. It seemed their approaches were very in tune with their characters, of trying to convince the other character of where they stand. I also do appreciate the levity that this episode brought. There were several jokes that outright stunk, but there was the jokes brought upon the characters of Michael Pike and Saru that were far more up my alley, which kind of feels like a bit more typical Star Trek humor, where there's minor quips or whatever, but it's more the playful energy between the characters, more so than the outright, we're going to do a donut, and these absurd statements. More so, like we said, the Vulcans don't do funny, and it makes him laugh and hurts his ribs. Not laugh out loud funny, but it brings a little smile to my face, because it shows that the characters are warm with each other enough to make each other smile and laugh, and not shit that Tilly was doing this episode. I appreciate that about this episode.
Yeah.
And this episode is a yum yum.
Yum yum.
The next episode we'll be covering will be episode 3, Point of Light, which has a stunning 6.5. So that is something to marvel at. The synopsis for this one goes as such. A surprise visitor to the USS Discovery brings shocking news about Spock and dredges up past regrets for Michael. Following the asteroid incident, Tilly struggles to keep a grip on her reality. Laurel's authority on Kronos is threatened. Yeah.
Yeah.
That episode, I mean, there are two things I remember very prominently. Mother.
Yeah.
And face paint with cameras in it. That's what I remember.
Yeah.
Random technology quibble thing. I know we've given up on that, but how long have holograms existed in this world? Because Tilly had a hologram message when she was a child, pen pals with May.
It was her yearbook.
Yeah, like when they were childhood pen pals, right?
Yeah.
How long have holograms existed in the world? I don't know. Who cares? They don't.
No. I don't think we even brought up how it's weird technology-wise, the tablet that Spock has had since he was a child that could do all of these projections and weird fucking dragon
I have
shit.
An answer for you. They're Vulcans.
Oh, they're smart. They're smart. It's fine. It's fine. They're just more technological advanced.
Yep. They had warp before we did, so there you go.
Yeah, it's fine. It's fine. Not Let's bad. Just move on.
So that is the episode. If you people out there listening have enjoyed it, feel free to rate and review us on whatever podcatcher allows it. It would be very much appreciated. Rachel, where can people contact us?
On various social medias at yumyumpod, or shoot us an email at yumyumpod@gmail.com.
Yeah, we are on all those socials. We're posting stuff on there. Further questions, little videos, fun memes and images, and just a general furthering of discussion.
Yeah,
and
if you don't want to have to type in the URL, just look in the description and click the links.
We've got our Patreon as well, in which we have fun extra bonus content. We have 3 extra shows on there. We talk about the Star Trek movies. We talk about the best of and worst of rated episodes of other Star Trek series. And we give our general views and thoughts on other pieces of media.
Non-Star Trek things as well.
Yep. So look us up on the Patreon, Yum Yum Pod, and it's all in the description. Well, Rach, I think, you know, we better be off now. We're getting a red signal. It's telling us that, ooh, there's an angel out there, and angels, you know, they're important, and, well, they're so important we have to stop the episode. We just have to stop recording and stop everything we're doing. Forget your emotional concerns. Just do it. We're just going to stop now because the red angel signal.
Let's go investigate. Let's grab our tricorders and go.